A Matter of Spirit is the quarterly justice journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. This article appeared in the summer 2019 issue on economic inequality. Inequality on the Margins by Chuck Collins. Chuck Collins is the director of the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he co-edits inequality.org. He is author of Born on Third Base, A One Percenter Makes the Case for Tackling Inequality, Bringing Wealth Home, and Committing to the Common Good with Chelsea Green. His most recent book, Is Inequality in America Irreversible?, is published by the Oxford UK-based Polity Press. For over four decades, we have lived through a period of extreme inequality of income, wealth, and opportunity. But for those who are marginalized in our society and economy, the overarching inequality trends have supercharged existing inequalities along the lines of gender, race, and immigration status. Between 1947 and 1977, the U.S. experienced relative shared prosperity as real wages increased for most workers, including women and people of color. But since the late 1970s, the U.S. has experienced four decades of flat or falling paychecks for a majority of wage earners. Since 1975, there have been extraordinary gains in productivity, but over half of U.S. wage earners have not shared in the fruits of their labors. In 1980, the bottom half of wage earners, roughly 117 million adults, earned an average of $16,000 a year in current dollars. In 2014, earnings for the bottom half of households had remained virtually unchanged, bumping up slightly to $16,200. Over the same period, the incomes of the top 1% tripled from average annual wages of $400,000 to $1.3 million. The result is persistent poverty at the bottom, a work treadmill for low-wage workers, and a squeeze on middle-class workers. For over four decades, poverty rates have remained unchanged. Over 13.5% of the population, an estimated 43 million people, live below the poverty line. A growing number of low-wage workers are toiling longer hours and taking on debt to survive economically. Most workers struggle with poverty wages. Half of U.S. jobs pay less than $15 an hour, and 41 million workers earn under $12 an hour, or less than $25,000 per year. These workers are disproportionately Black and Latino and female, and many of them may be undocumented. Most of these low-wage jobs have few or no benefits, including no sick leave, vacation days, child care, or retirement plans. These are the workers who clean hotel rooms, take care of children and the elderly, serve food, work at retail counters, and as janitors and security guards. Stagnant and low wages fuel a difficult work-life balancing act for many individuals and working families attempting to survive. Underwater Nation. These overarching inequality trends undermine a sense of economic security and well-being for a majority of the society. The U.S. government shutdown that began at the end of 2018 dramatized just how many workers live financially close to the edge. By one estimate, almost 80% of U.S. workers live paycheck to paycheck. Stable middle-class workers, including small-town federal prison guards and airline safety inspectors in major cities, had to survive without paychecks. But the vulnerability they experienced wasn't unusual. A majority of the U.S. population lives with very little by way of a savings cushion, with greater levels of vulnerability for women, people of color, new immigrants, and undocumented workers. One troubling indicator is the rising ranks of the underwater nation, households with zero or negative wealth. These families have no savings reserves. They owe more than they own. The percentage of underwater households increased from 15.5% in 1983 to 21.2% today. The next 20% of all U.S. households have positive net worth, but not much. 4 in 10 families couldn't come up with $400 cash if they needed it for an emergency, according to the Federal Reserve. This underwater wealth experience is more present for people of color, experienced by 33% of Latino families and 37% of Black families. Data is sparse for First Nation households, but we can presume their precariousness is even greater. Unemployment may be low, but it masks an insecure population. At the root of the problem is growing inequality. Many families still haven't fully recovered from the economic meltdown a decade ago. The racial economic divide. While focusing on income inequality and the earnings gap is important, wealth is a critical indicator of economic security and well-being. Families that attain a certain level of wealth and stability are able to weather economic adversity and take advantage of opportunities that are hard to pursue when they are in economic survival mode. Unequal wealth is where centuries of racial discrimination show up in the present in the form of unequal savings, home ownership rates, and financial stability. These racial wealth disparities have grown more divergent during a time of overall inequality. Today, the median white family has 41 times the wealth as the median Black family, and 22 that of the median Latino family. Concentration of wealth and power. There is a tendency to focus on inequality through the lens of what is happening to low-income and working people. As a result, many solutions focus on lifting the floor. But one of the drivers of extreme inequality is the growing concentration of wealth and power at the top, and the ability of this segment of society to tilt the rules of the economy to capture more wealth and income. To reverse these inequalities, we have to understand the connection between concentrated wealth and the rise of economic insecurity for the majority. For example, as wages have stagnated, the gap between the compensation of CEOs and average or lowest paid workers in firms has grown. In the mid-1960s, the ratio between average worker pay and CEO pay was about 20 to 1. In recent years, the ratio has swollen to over 300 to 1. The wealthiest 1% of households, now roughly 42% of all private wealth, is up from 33% in 1983. At the very pinnacle of U.S. wealth is the Forbes 400, all billionaires with a combined net worth of $2.9 trillion. Together, this group has more wealth than the bottom 64% of the U.S. population combined. The wealthiest three billionaires, Bezos, Buffett, and Gates, have more wealth than the bottom half of the U.S. population combined. We will not succeed in reducing inequality without breaking up the concentration of wealth and power at the top. Significantly raising taxes on the ultra-wealthy serves both to reduce the corrupting influence of plutocratic power, as well as producing significant public revenue that can be invested in creating wealth-building opportunities. Solutions. One promising development is there is a society-wide conversation as how to reverse these inequalities and reduce the racial economic divide. If we can implement some of these meaningful policies, we could begin to reverse these inequalities over the next generation. Raising the minimum wage and expanding health insurance coverage are two well-known proposals that would reverse inequality and reduce the racial and gender gap. Creating a stable immigration status while clamping down on employer wage theft would help the most vulnerable workers in our society. Another interesting solution is to establish baby bonds as counterweight to wealth divisions that are perpetuated by unequal inheritance and family help, what sociologists call the intergenerational transmission of advantage. Baby bonds are accounts set up at birth for children and endowed by the federal government with assets that will grow over time. These funds could be tapped when a child reaches adulthood for education, starting a business, and purchasing a home. One recent study found that had we implemented a baby bond program 40 years ago, the Latino-white wealth divide would be closed by now, and the Black-white wealth divide would have shrunk by 82%. Another fix is to reorient our upside-down tax system and target wealth-building subsidies to no- and low-wealth families and individuals. In 2016, the U.S. government spent $677 billion through incentives in the tax code to assist families to purchase homes, attend college, and save and invest for the future. These benefits, however, flow almost exclusively to the already wealthy. The top 1% of all U.S. households received more in these forms of federal spending than the bottom 80% combined. Very little or no support goes to low and moderate income families, particularly those of color. Redirecting over $600 billion a year to low-interest loan programs for first-time homebuyers and the baby bonds described could significantly chip away at the wealth divide within a generation. One way to boost wealth building and savings is to create a postal banking alternative to the predatory lending institutions that prey on low-income families in rural areas and inner cities by charging excessive fees and interest rates for the basic financial services. The U.S. Postal Service is uniquely positioned to provide financial services, such as check cashing and depository accounts, for the estimated 10 million low-income households that are unbanked. Another solution that would have multiple benefits would be to establish a guaranteed employment program that pays a decent living wage. Black and Latino workers are twice as likely to be among the working poor or underemployed. Like the 1930s Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps or Works Project Administration, these jobs would provide dignified income and improve our nation's physical and human infrastructure. Many proposals to reduce inequality, such as raising the minimum wage, expanding health care coverage, and taxing the wealthy, are broadly popular among the electorate. Now we need to organize our communities to retake our captured political system.